Looking for Signs. Diane Cameron is a writer, speaker, teacher, and spiritual director. She is an advocate for people in need at Unity House in Troy, New York. Looking for Signs is her new book. It's a collection of her columns and essays. She will be doing a reading and signing in our region, and we'll tell you about that in just a few moments. It is a great pleasure to welcome not only author, but also WAMC commentator occasionally, Diane Cameron. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you here.
It is a pleasure to be here with the hardest working man in radio.
Yeah, no, that's not. We're got to get a hardworking
last
crew
week.
All the way around. Yeah, man. Well, thank you. I'll tell you, it is a delight to have you here. And this collection is fascinating because it is it's very eclectic, and yet there is a there is something that brings them all together, isn't it? I mean, there is a commonality to these
There
writings.
Is, and I have to tell you, I didn't quite realize that until after the book was published, because I've been writing for almost 30 years, and I picked my favorites and ones that people told me that they loved. And when I went back and looked through, I thought, oh, I'm seeing two threads here. One is, please think. I'm begging people to think about issues. And the other one is there something bigger than you, bigger than us? Where is spirituality in your life?
There's also a gentleness and a kindness.
Thank you.
Where you feel that it is, there is a moment where we should all perhaps just take a breath and again, think about what it is that we're doing and not move as fast as we're moving.
Yes, very much so. And I thank you for saying that, because I think one of my values is compassion. And I think that without beating people over the head, I'm trying to express compassion. I think one of the pieces about Happy Mother's Day, Medea, is about mothers that struggle.
And there's what I found interesting about that piece and other pieces is that we identify with that even if we're not a mom. You know, we identify with that struggle because we see that in our lives. We know people. We see it. We
right.
see it as simple as going to the store and seeing the mom dealing with their child of just trying to get through the express lane without, you know, killing the person in front of them or their own child.
Right. Because I think part of that is, you know, a certain level of maturity is knowing I'm not perfect. I have bad days. Even if I don't say something out loud, I have bad thoughts. You know,
yeah.
I have wished ill of people. So I know people, I understand then when someone maybe acts on that.
Yeah. When you look at, I was, the one thing in writing the introduction of looking at your bio of writer, speaker, and teacher, and I knew all of that, how do you see yourself as a spiritual director?
It's a newer piece of my life. It's in the past couple of years, and that is meeting with people and talking to them about it, people who want to improve their spiritual life or enhance it. And one of the things that has been interesting is spiritual direction is traditional in Catholic churches, you know, Christian denominations, they teach it. But people who have come to me have primarily been agnostic or atheist.
Mm.
But they, too, want a spiritual life, not a religious life, but a spiritual life. And I was your fabulous interview an hour ago with Gary Wills, Bravo,
yeah.
to that very point of we can be the body of the church and of spirituality.
Is Catholicism your religious background?
No, I'm very mixed. I'm a Heinz 57. I grew up in the Methodist church. I left and ran as far away as I could, shopped like crazy, and then as an adult converted to Catholicism, the very liberal kind of Catholicism, I must say.
Well, and it's fascinating because we find ourselves exactly, and you use this term, shopping, where not only are we shopping for a religious ideal, but we're also shopping for an individual church. We're shopping for that priest. We're shopping for that community.
Right, and people have said jokingly, kind of like Goldilocks, you know, too hard, too soft, just right.
Right.
But I think that's true. We want to be comfortable, not in a lazy intellectual way, but comfortable in that sigh of, I can be me here. I can bring my brokenness here.
Right.
And it'll be okay.
I went to on Ash Wednesday, I went to a church here in Albany, not my parish church, but a church here in Albany that I was not familiar with. And basically, I went there because their schedule corresponded with mine. And I looked online, found out when they were having Mass, and I went over in the late afternoon on my way home. And one of the things that struck me about it was that there is a woman who was a deacon of the church. There was a priest who was saying the ultimate Mass, but the woman who was doing the readings, who was doing the gave the homily, there were so many young people that were a part of the church, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, and I feel that very much in the church I go to, but I thought, wow, you know, this is, and again, going back to what Gary Wills was saying, it's out there. You know, it is out there, and people sort of, and I'm not bringing this just to Catholicism, but this overall look for something that works for us, spiritually speaking.
Right, and I think a piece of that, this isn't my idea, I borrowed this from someone, and I wish I could credit them, is we can substitute the word community for God. You know, think of, you know, community is love. Love and serve community, because I think that's what we want. I mean, we want, it's why Cheers. People love Cheers because where someone knows your name and I can bring all of me. And then I can be of service too. I can turn it around and be of service to my community and I can receive from my community.
And we know the teachings of a church. We know what we are told. But then there's also, and this is all my opinion, but then there's the practicality of it.
Yes.
And how that differs in our community. And our community may say, well, it's okay for us to do this, this, and this because we wouldn't want to exclude this person who is a very important part,
right,
even though they don't probably fit into the model of what this religious ideal says.
Right.
But why would we exclude them? And I find that whole dynamic fascinating about religion and spirituality overall.
I do too, and I think one of the things that
we have more power than we give ourselves credit for.
We do, and we need to, I think, claim it and talk back, because I think we also forget, you know, hear criticism of the church or organized religion, and there's a long list of the errors and grievances against organized religion, but it's an institution, it's an organization. Organizations struggle and suffer. Businesses do. Nonprofits do. Churches do. Mosques do, because that's the politics. But separate from that is the people, the supportive group of people. So when I go to church, I'm voting for that group of people, and we'll figure out the politics as we go.
Right. And when you write on these issues, how much of it is with an understanding that many people how delicate are you in writing about it? In the sense of, is it a concern of yours? These are very touchy issues.
Very much.
And you know. So, are you sort of speaking to an audience, or are you speaking of how you feel and sort of see how it goes?
Joe, that's a great question, because a friend was asking me the other day who I picture as the audience, and I learned very early on, and I'm grateful for this, to not picture an audience, because I know as soon as I pictured an audience, I'll start to lie. I'll make me look better. I'll try to be smarter. I'll try to be bigger. So I try, you know, if I picture anything, it's me talking to my brothers in the living room. You know, what would I say to them? But then I also, you know, I pray and I try to be compassionate so that I'm not banging anybody over the head who disagrees with me, because at the heart of things, I don't mind if people disagree. People write back to me all the time, and I think if you're disagreeing, one, you read it, two, you're thinking about it, that's a win. I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. And let's continue the conversation, because I think that's what we have a shortage of in our community.
We so often talk about in politics where, you know, we're fed up with politics. We're fed up with we're fed up with the government. We're fed up with what happens. And yet, and certainly there have been extreme, exclusions to this ideal, but that, and yet we are very willing to reelect our representative because we know them. And I think we take that a lot, because in our own lives, spiritual or otherwise, yes, there's what happens in the world, but then what happens with us, there seems to be a commonality.
There does. I think that there does. And this is why I've worked in human services for many years. Yeah. I'm at Unity House. You know, we serve people in poverty, serious mental illness, women in violence. People who are in the gray of lives, especially right now with the gun issues, we're hearing, you know, good and bad support of people with mental illness. What do you do in the community? That's been an issue for generations, decades, millennium. All communities have had that issue. So you have to think of the people, and then you have to think of the common good. You know, I have a Canadian family as well, so there is, we speak of the common good always.
Going back to what you were talking about, the of the threads of the book, and one of them being just thinking and taking a moment to just look at these issues. And it brings up, we have such a fast-paced world, and you could argue it always has been that, but obviously we have technology that accelerates us at every moment. And, you know, what is it, do you think, that is... I find it fascinating because when you start to read, it isn't a hard sell in the sense of getting people to calm down for a moment and think. And they seem to be very accepting. It seems to be the rub of actually getting them to stop and read it.
Yes. And I particularly think, and I use social media and I love it for all kinds of communication, but in some ways it's pre-digested thought, you know, following Facebook or Twitter during, you know, Super Bowl or the Grammys, you know, somebody else says the funny joke and I pass it to my friend.
Right.
I didn't think of the funny thing that maybe would bomb, but I didn't think of my own funny thing to pass on.
Yeah. And it doesn't. And the other thing that annoys me about that is that it doesn't always have to be a funny thing.
You know,
we don't have to perform. It could just be how we feel or you know, good job or, you know, what do you think about that?
Right. Or to say something that might be perceived as compassionate, sentimental, touching. You know, it sort of gets the thumbs down, sadly. I'm very aware that reading levels have changed. I'm reading some books now from the 40s and the 50s. They're written at a very high thought and vocabulary level. Mm. So what has happened there? And that affects our thinking. You need words to think. You need vocabulary with which to think. And I think, you know, there's information in your earlier conversation. How do we get kids to embrace language and reading younger? Because it's about thinking, not just reading. It's about thinking.
And again, going back to that commonality, I mean, even using social media, I mean, I can post a lot about things that we're doing on the show and different things.
Sure.
The other day, on the day after the fun drive, I was at a meeting and I looked down and I realized that I was wearing a white sock and a black sock. And I took a picture of it and I posted it and I said, I believe that the fun drive fatigue has finally caught up with me. And I got like 200 comments on that because there is that commonality. You know, people understand what it's like to be at a moment in life where you can't even put your socks on right.
Right. And you can't find your keys and you're turned the wrong way down the street. And I think that's our humanness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how do we become more human? I mean, how do we then take it the next step and be more understanding? Because I see that, but then I also see, you know, a lack of civility or understanding and a sense of entitlement that many of us have that don't allow that humanness to always come through.
Right. And I think that humanness is the maybe the unwillingness to go toward compassion. Another brilliant idea, and Thomas Oz gave me this. He said, anytime we are saying to ourselves, we read a scary story in the news, something horrific happens. That's every day. And we say, can you imagine? The answer is yes. Yes, we can imagine hurting our child. Yes, we can imagine getting so frustrated with our parent with Alzheimer's that we walk out of the house for 8 hours. We can imagine all those things, but we're afraid to go to our own place, so we judge the others. And I think it's the slowing down, but it's also saying, under the right circumstances, I could do every bad thing that people do.
The name of the book is Looking for Signs. It's a beautiful collection of essays and columns. Diane Cameron will be reading and signing the collection on Saturday, February 23rd from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Bookhouse at Stuyvesant Plaza. They're ready for you. It is 3 to 5 on February 23rd on Saturday at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza. You can go to dianecameron.info. For more information, dianecameron.info for more information on that event and the book itself. Diane Cameron, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Always
for being
a pleasure,
with us.
Joe. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.